Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joined me by our lead prospect writer, Matt Thompson, for the Miami Marlins Prospect Minute. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, man. This is an interesting system to talk about, but we're doing the Marlins today.
It is an interesting system. It's interesting. There were two people. I think it was Eric Cross from over at Fantrax, and then and Paul Martin, obviously from our site, were like bantering back and forth on Twitter on which one of these teams has the greater potential.
Paul Martin is writing on Marlins write up, fantasy prospect write up.
They were arguing which team had the bigger potential to lose a record amount of games this year. So,
Who's the choices?
The Marlins and the Orioles.
I think the Marlins will be better based off their pitching.
Yeah, and that's what Paul was saying too. So, I think the Orioles definitely, but the Marlins suck. So this will be.
Oh no, they do.
I'll be interested to see after some of the trades they made what you think of their minor league system.
Their number one prospect is kind of like, I don't want to be lazy about it, but like we don't really know much about him.
Yeah, I just traded him away.
You might not hate that.
I'm not going to hate that because I'm happy with the return that I got for Victor. But why don't you go ahead and talk about him a little bit?
Yeah, over at Prospects Live, if you missed it, I'll try to find it and retweet it. But we did a breakdown of all recent players from Cuba that came over and talked about like the hit tool grades and the grades they were given, and compared them across the board. And what we came away with from a results standpoint, from projected results standpoint for Victor, and then the results from everybody else is, I think Victor might be the more polished guy to come over in recent years. Which isn't all that surprising. If you know the guy's background, like his dad has been his coach for the last several years. And Victor played in the highest level of Cuban baseball at 16 years old. And he's been playing it ever since, obviously. His dad drafted him at 16. He didn't play too much. But obviously now, last couple of years, he has been playing. And it's been really, really good. And then obviously now him and his brother, Victor Mesa Jr., decided to take the plunge and defect. And I look at Victor and I think he's probably a better defender than hitter right now. Everything I read indicates that he won the Gold Glove Award in Cuba, which, okay, right. Everyone, you know what I mean? You're fully right to have some questions about that. But I think what we see when we watch him a little bit on tape is you can tell he's an athletic guy. Really fluid motion, plus speed, really good reads, and a strong arm in center field. He's definitely an up-the-middle profile, which, again, the Marlins now have Lewis Brinson, who profiles as a plus defender up the middle. Monty Harrison profiles as a plus defender up the middle. So you're looking at three potential center fielders in an outfield. So that can help the pitching staff in a big ballpark. So that's another added value. I think Victor is a 30 stolen base threat right out of the gate. And I think projecting out future tools, I'm going to say 50 hit, 40 power. 50 hit, 40 power, 70 runner, and really good plus defensive skills. And that's a very solid player. In my latest update for Prospects Live, he's the 59th prospect on my top 100. Not for the site, because we're averaging out all three of our ranks. So this is just my rank, but he's going to be 59 on that list. I think he might go up or down a spot or two, but we look at him, he's more polished. And I keep going back to the makeup. Everything seems awesome. Probably double-digit homer guy. 10 to 12. Maybe get up to closer to 20 at peak. But he's going to be a hit-over-power guy. that plays really good defense. So that's always kind of the guys that set it with a little bit longer leashes than others, higher floor. So I'm kind of aggressive on Victor, but I guess I'm within reason. In our initial first year player draft list, he was 4, and now he's 9. So he's gone down a little bit, not because of him, but it's because we've dove into these other organizations more with these top 30 lists, and we come out liking the other draft prospects a little bit better. But Victor Mesa is a solid player, projects out to be. The next guy is part of their – we're starting to get into the return on some of the trades that they've made. And spoiler alert, they're not that great. I have Monty Harrison as my second prospect in the organization, and he is – I want to make sure I get this right. On my top 100 list, he is just outside the top 100. Now, I will say with the caveat that if the – well, look, the backstory here. He used to have a big leg kick, and Jason Waddell from Prospects Live has seen him quite a few times and when he was going through the minors and saw him here at Double A and put a – 20 grade on the hit tool just because the K rate is 37%. I'll repeat that, 37%. He hit 240, 316, 399, but 19 homers and 28 stolen bases. So you see the upside. If he can get up to like even a 40 hitter, he's an above average major leaguer just because the defense and the arm's 80 grade, and the power and speed potential. And I think that's a doable thing. In the Arizona Fall League, he made significant swing adjustments, and he hit for better contact, but he didn't hit for nearly as much power, but he ditched the leg kick. Went kind of to a shorter stride, just pick up the foot, drop the foot down, and it was different. It was definitely different. There's a video on our website now, Prospects Live, the Marlins write-up of his new swing, and it's a quieter, wider setup. He's strong enough to where he can drive the ball without fully utilizing the hips in the lower half. And in the AFL this year, he hit 328, 425, 393, didn't hit a homer, and he had 16 strikeouts and 10 walks and 73 plate appearances. So it's some improvement, but not nearly enough. But he should go to AAA this year, which is going to be the last year in New Orleans for their AAA affiliate before they move to Omaha, Nebraska. But I'm not giving up on Monty yet. I have him in the 105 range. I think I'm the high guy out of the three rankers, though. So keep that in mind when you're looking at Monty. But I'm not ready to give up here because he's got potential to be a dynamite fantasy asset, a dynamic athlete, and even better real-life player because of the defense. So, I do think his defense alone gets him to the big leagues. I think he's a fourth outfielder at minimum.
So he's Carlos Gomez-esque.
Yeah, he's Lewis, and the floor is Lewis Brinson. What you saw this year with Brinson is the floor. Yes, Carlos Gomez is a very apt comparison. He's not as what's the word I want to use without sounding whatever. You know what I mean. He's not as enigmatic, I guess I'll say, as Gomez is. But I like Monty Harrison. My number three guy is a draft pick from this year for the Marlins. And it wasn't their first rounder, and it's not their second rounder either. Tristan Pompey, the guy from the University of Kentucky, is my third-ranked Marlins prospect for fantasy. And I like the skills here. Really big kid. Power profile with good defense. I'm trying to find my notes here. I apologize. 89th overall pick this summer. 24-game stint in the Florida State League with excellent plate skills, 299, 408, 3 homers, 21% K rate, 14% walk rate, 10 stolen bases. Probably a 15-15 guy. I don't think the upside is all that huge. But he's 6'4", 200 pounds. And he has a future average hit tool with average power. Pretty decent defender. Well, I think he could be a average defender at best. He's probably a left field only profile because the arm isn't great, but I think he can play decent outfield. He played center field in the minors, and he won't do that, but I think he's a left fielder. But I don't mind Pompey. I think there's a lot of skills here. He's a guy I seem to end up with a lot of my second-round picks in my first-year player draft. I've probably drafted him twice in my two drafts. So not on purpose either. It just happens to fall there, and it's the best value. My number four guy is Eysan Diaz, former Diamondback prospect, former Brewer prospect, former Mike Warner crush.
Is it a former crush? Or
it still might be. Yeah, it might be.
Warner doesn't quit, guys.
No, he doesn't. I'm surprised you guys don't have him in the FWFB league.
I let Mike pick a few guys, but I think by the time Mike joined my team, Diaz may have already been gone. And I really tried to keep him focused on major league talent.
Yeah, okay, that's good. But the thing with Diaz is I get the fantasy, or I get the appeal, I do, but I think from a fantasy standpoint, it's a 45 hit tool at best because he strikes out 25% of the time, probably in the major leagues. He's 27% now in AAA, AA, AAA. 232, 340, 399 / 13 homers, 14 stolen bases. I think he can hit 25 homers. I think that's the ceiling here. But I think he's an average defender at second base. Hits the ball on the ground too much. It keeps going up, and now it's mid 40% on the ground. So if he wants to tap into that 25 homer potential, he's got to figure out a way to hit the ball in the air more. I don't think he adds much to the stolen base department. I think he's an average runner with a below average hit tool, but he does walk, 13% walk rate. So if he walks, if he can walk about 10% of the time, I think he can steal 10, 12 bases. If it's less than that, I don't anticipate big stolen base numbers from Eysan Diaz. He's a higher floor, lower ceiling type prospect for me. Nick Niedert is going to be my fifth guy on this list. They got him from the Mariners. He kind of was a pitch-to-contact guy, and he's taken a step forward since entering the Marlins organization. 25% K rate and 152 innings in AA this year. That's pretty impressive stuff. Probably a low-end number two starter at best-case scenario, and a realistic outcome, though, is probably a four starter for fantasy leagues. 6'1" frame, so he's not really a big towering presence. It's a low 90s fastball that he gets good extension on because he really explodes off the mound on the delivery. Plus changeup. Has a kind of a curveball slider hybrid that's the third breaking ball here, the third pitch here in his primary breaking ball. But now he's added that element of missing bats more than he has when the Mariners plucked him in the draft. So Nick Niedert's an interesting guy. Next guy on this list is he's still a prospect. Number six is Sandy Alcantara from the Cardinals from the Marcelo Osuna deal. Big fastball, 95.5 miles an hour in his brief major league time. A potential plus changeup, and it's a really good pitch he uses against the lefties. He's got a slider, and again, the slider needs work. It's not a reliable pitch right now, and he's also got a curveball, and curveball is a show-me pitch, too. The Cardinals took the curveball away from him. He's reintroduced it back with Miami. This should be the year where he grabs a rotation spot and runs with it, I hope, because he needs to be better with the command. If not, he can be a pretty good reliever. But that'd be a disappointment for the Marlins if that's the primary return for Osuna. You get a reliever. So I think they're going to do everything they can to make sure he starts. Jordan Yamamoto is my next guy. He was the throw-in piece in the Christian Yelich trade, but he might have a chance to be the best one if Monte Harrison doesn't pan out. Yamamoto is a 90-92 mile an hour fastball guy, but although in the fall he wore down, it was 87-89. But it's really good stuff. It's more pitchability and sequencing than stuff, I should say. But it's a high-spin curveball that flashes plus. It has a changeup and a little bit of a slider. Doesn't really get good extension, but he throws strikes, man. He's a guy that he keeps producing. I keep expecting him to fall back numbers-wise. But in 68 innings this year, he had a 1.83 ERA, 2.13 FIP. So it's not like he crazy outproduces peripherals. I mean, he was pretty good. Missed some time, I believe, with it was an elbow injury. Didn't need surgery. Ended up coming back and pitching in the fall league, so that should quiet any injury concerns. He pitched fairly well in the fall league also. But if he throws a lot of strikes, I worry he throws too many strikes and might get beat up a little bit at the big league level. But it's interesting profile. Trevor Rogers is the next starter. I got another arm here. A couple more arms coming up here, too. Rogers is a guy from New Mexico. Prep arm, 21 years old. Drafted him in the 13th overall pick in 2017. I look at Rogers, and it's a 90-93 fastball. Gets really good ground ball percentage. Has a changeup, slider, and a curve that are all behind the fastball. But he's got him. I think he's a mid-rotation arm. So... Braxton Garrett is also here, and Tommy John, he got drafted in 2016. They shut him down after the draft season due to workload. In 2017, he got off to a little slow start. Then they slow started in, like, the complex, didn't throw in games, and then hurt his elbow, had Tommy John. So now as we enter the 2019 season, Braxton Garrett has thrown 15 professional innings since getting drafted in 2016.
Is that not good?
That's not good. He was advertised as a lefty that could move quickly, too. And they shut him down after the draft, which I get it, a heavy workload, but now this is what happens. This is some of the risk you take when you do that. So he's going to get pushed aggressively. He was supposed to be a safe prep arm. Obviously, that hasn't proven to be. I mean, I guess it still can be, but so far, not so good. I still like Garrett. Low 90s fastball when he was healthy. His best, the curveball was a 70 grade pitch. So those two combinations alone should get him at least into the back end of a rotation. But I think the ceiling is a little bit higher.
You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. All preseason long, we'll be bringing you the most in-depth analysis to get you ready for your drafts. There will be 30 team previews with 30 prospect previews during the month of January. That's 60 podcasts in 30 days. Then, we will be dropping almost daily pods until the start of the season. You can also get your 2019 draft guide called The Fantasy Benefit in ebook and paperback on Amazon.com. Or if you prefer, you can get it via email in PDF form. It has over 250 pages of analysis, player profiles, ranks, strategy guides, and prospect information for cheaper than the magazine you get in the store. Plus, we'll be updating both PDF and ebook all the way until draft season is over for any changes that happen in the landscape of fantasy baseball. Stay tuned all preseason long to Friends of Fantasy Benefits so you can be ahead of the curve.
Edward Cabrera is another big-time arm. He can touch 100. Sits 93-97, though. Has a changeup that's fringy. 6'4", 175 for Edward Cabrera. He's probably a back-end starter reliever. Zach Gallen is in that. We got him from the Cardinals in the Ozuna trade. Kind of the kitchen sink kind of guy. Four-seam fastball, cutter, curveball, changeup, slider. Throws everything. Gets ground balls. Doesn't get strikeouts. Should be up in the majors this year. Garrett Cooper will be their first baseman this year, I hope. He'll probably beat out Peter O'Brien. He's definitely worthy of a grab late, because I think he's an easy bet for 20 home runs if he gets enough at-bats. I like Garrett Cooper. He kind of got squeezed out in the Yankee system because they have a roster crunch because of all the talent they have, and the Marlins end up getting him for pretty much nothing. So I think he's a guy to watch. And then we're entering into the territory of their first two draft picks this year. I like Osiris Johnson, their second-round pick, better. Middle infield guy with some speed and some power. Hit tool is behind. 250, 276, 378 slash. He's a really aggressive hitter. He's Jimmy Rollins' cousin. So that's kind of an interesting side fact. He needs to tone down the aggressiveness, but he's got some power and some speed. It's a long shot, but hopefully it works. Connor Scott is kind of in the same spot. He was an overdraft this year in the draft. Nobody that I've seen thinks that Connor Scott should have gone in the top 15 picks, but he did this year. 6'4", 180. Went to the same high school as Kyle Tucker, so obviously he draws Kyle Tucker comps. The swing looks similar, but the results are not. He's a much different player. He's built more around speed than Connor Scott is. Speed and using off fields, plus defender in center field. Really good arm, but like I think the upside here is like 275, 10, and 25 steals. Which is a nice player, but he's going to take forever for him to get here because he's a really raw kid. There were some teams that had him on their draft board as a left-handed pitcher. So the Marlins took him in the middle of the first round as an outfielder. So it was kind of an overdraft, but if you like a guy, go get him because he might not have been there the second time around. But Jorge Guzman, who they got from the Stanton heist, was an overrated guy. He's probably a reliever. It's a 70 grade fastball that's 97, 98, but with shaky command. No real off speed pitch yet. He needs to be taught a splitter. If he can get a splitter, Jason Waddell says this, and I agree with him. If he can teach this guy a splitter with how he throws it, it'll be a game changer for him, but he doesn't have that yet. Davis Bradshaw was essentially the Barry Bonds of Division II baseball last year. He was the Barry Bonds of his community college league, Meridian Community College in Mississippi. Bradshaw hit .442, .523, and slugged .718 in 52 games. So that'll play. I don't really care what level you play at. The Marlins took him with you in the 11th round. 6'3", good pull power, a little bit of speed. He stole 20 bags in his pro debut. Didn't hit a homer, though. Bit concerning, but I think he's got something there. And then Will Banfield, second to last guy I want to touch on, is a catcher who has a backup catcher floor just because of how good the defense is, but he's got some power too. So premium defensive skills with some power puts him on the map for catchers. Brian Miller is a hit tool stolen base guy. He's not an 80 burner like the 40 stolen base total says he is. He's probably a 55-60 runner, but he's just really smart, and he's a slap hitter, so don't expect any power. Bryson Brigman is the guy they got from the Mariners. Similar profile to Miller, but he's got more power. Not speed grades out the same, but doesn't play the same. Can play either spot up the middle. Definite bench piece for the future. James Nelson was the Marlins' 2017 Minor League Player of the Year, where he showed just awesome contact skills and a little bit of power and good defense. Kind of could Brian Hayes light almost in a sense, but had a really bad year in 2018. But I still think he's an average hit tool, average power, really good defense, and some speed. So I think he's a useful player. James Nelson. Jose Devers was the another piece they got from the Yankees in the Stanton trade. He's Rafael Devers' cousin. And he's a guy with some speed. I think he can grow into some power. He's an 18-year-old in a full-season league, and he held his own at 272, 313, 330. So I think there's a lot more in the tank here. Chris Torres is a defensive speed shortstop. Colton Hawk's a good reliever that can throw hard. Robert Duggar, the guy from the Mariners, is a back-end starter. Joe Dunnan is Alex Rodriguez's nephew. They got him from NC State. The swing is identical. He looks like A-Rod in the face, 6'2", 200 pounds. Just average bat speed kind of tempers the expectations for me a little bit here. I think Dunnan can hit 20 home runs at peak, probably a third baseman. Mackenzie Mills, who they got from the Phillies, is probably a backhand starter reliever. And Victor Mesa Jr. Got $1 million because they wanted his brother. Didn't really know much about Victor Mesa Jr. He's 16 years old. I just think it's funny because you see teams like the Red Sox and the Braves get penalized for making package deals, right, when they sign international guys. And it was very, very clear that Victor Mesa and Victor Mesa Jr. were a package deal. They were advertised as a package deal. The Marlins signed both of them, and they gave Mesa Jr. $1 million, even though he's like a low – he probably grades out as a $50,000 kind of guy. But they gave him $1 million, and yet you don't hear anything about it. That just shows how – there are no rules in the international market, and Major League Baseball does what they want as far as policing it. And part of me thinks they let the Marlins slide because of much transition and turmoil they have here. But package deals are clearly a violation of every rule. You know what I mean? And this was a package deal in every sense of the word. They were advertised as that. They had their press conference together. Victor Mesa Jr. got $1 million because of it. Like, and yet nothing happens, but it is what it is. Austin Dean should be up this year. He's a probably fourth outfielder, but he got hot down the stretch for the Marlins and might have played himself into the left field job to start the season. And that's pretty much as good as a recap of the Marlins system as I can do at this short a time. But it's intriguing in a way, but it's – I think it's definitely in the bottom half of baseball, though, which is much uncertainty. There might be as much uncertainty in the system as any, to be honest.
All right. Well, that will wrap us up for this episode. You can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTompFWFB, me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. Read all of Matt's great stuff and a lot of other people's great stuff over on ProspectsLive.com. You can read my stuff on Friends Fantasy Benefits, Fangraphs, and Fantasy Alarm. And go get the draft guide, please.
Yes.
Go get the draft guide, coming out soon, very, very soon. So that's going to do it for us. For Matt and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.